greet CCNSO counselors and CCNSO members to this joint meeting with the GAC. I hear that there are some GAC members and potentially CCNSO members on the phone. At least I think I heard some voices. So this time we have 36 countries members present in the room and three observers. A number of countries follow our meeting remotely to the extent possible. The proposed agenda of our meeting is displayed now on the screen, maybe slightly difficult to read. I would suggest that we start with the draft GAC principles on IDN CCTLDs. Then we may want to take stock on IDN CCTLD fast track implementation, then discuss progress in the working group on ICANN regions, then activities of delegation, redelegation working group. I believe that that would be of interest of many people here. And I have lost now the agenda, proposed agenda. So geographic names as another potential, and then budget issues. So pretty long. I'm not sure that we will get through all of them, but if you would accept, we would start with draft GAC principles. But before that, I will turn mic to Chris, to Kate.
Well, just by way of introduction, my name is Keith Davidson, and I'm the co-chair of this GAC CCNSO group for today. But I think Chris Despain has the comments on the GAC. The first comments on the GAC principles.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, Kit. To kickstart the first point of on our agenda, I would like to maybe recall a little history. We had a a conference call about 3 weeks ago where we engaged with some CCNSO counselors on the issue. We received equally a note from the chair on behalf of the CCNSO regarding the concerns CCNSO had with these principles, and based on our conversation, there was an understanding that the GAC during this meeting could endorse these principles as interim and submit them as input to ongoing PDP, and assuring that those GAC representatives who are on the working group would follow very carefully the implementation of how the working group would take those suggestions and input on board. So this morning we had a conversation here, and this preliminary agreement, which we reached on the conference call, was endorsed. And I would like to inform you that the GAC, as a result of this meeting, will endorse GAC interim principles on IDN CCTLDs. So I would like maybe, upon request of some GAC members, and since in the note you send across, there were a number of issues of your concern, maybe we could briefly try to discuss them here, and to see how far or how distant we are in understanding of those things. Chris.
Thank you, Yanis, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Chris Despain, and I'm the chair of the CCNSO Council. Thank you. That's excellent. It's excellent news. We're very comfortable with the concept of these being interim principles, and if I may say, I think it's once again an example of the fact that the CCNSO and the Governmental Advisory Committee managed to work extremely well together, especially when we communicate. I have to say that I'm not we're not, you know, immensely prepared for a deep and in-depth discussion on these any particular issues. What happened was that we wrote our letter of concern saying, very simply put, that we felt that making these firm GAC principles carried some weight with them and that there was a process going on and so on. And then Yanis came back and asked if it was possible that we could perhaps just give a few examples of what our you know, why that might be a concern. And we've provided some to you. We briefly touched on them on our joint call. And I suppose my preferred way would be those who have perhaps questions or comments on the four bullet points relating to principle 1, 3, 3, and 6 would be, you know, if you could ask some questions, I'll endeavour to answer them. But just to take perhaps to start us rolling an example.
No, I will put them in.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. So I'm picking at random here, but the last bullet points, GAC Principle 6 refers to a potential limit on the number of IDN strings per territory, based upon possible limitations to the overall size of the root zone file. This issue and the possible development of mechanisms that could be put in place to manage such limitation sit squarely within the scope of the IDN PDP. We approach this in a simple manner, which is that we first of all work out a policy. We will first of all work out a policy that deals with how you are entitled to an IDN CCTLD, and if you look at the, just as take an example, if you look at the fast track process, it's based on some very limited entitlements. It's one per language. The language has to be non-Latin, etc. And it may be, and I can't say, I don't know, but it may be that actually limitations to the overall size of the root zone file isn't in any way affected by our end policy, simply because the policy becomes so tight that you know there is only going to be a small number of, or you know, a relatively small number of IDN CCTLDs. I'm trying to remember. Anyone can help me. I think maybe it was Mark who, on the telephone call, we ended up having a discussion about one particular principle when I can't remember. I think it might have been 3. If you take the second bullet point, for example, principle 3 implies that all countries and distinct economies have equal rights to create IDN CCTLDs. However, current practice is that rights are linked to a listing in ISO 31661. This wording requires further discussion and clarification. There's also the point, of course, that we are way away from coming to a point where we would be considering, and I'm just using this as an example, the concept that a territory could choose to have an IDN CCTLD in any particular language. So we haven't even started to consider, as an example, whether Australia would have a right to decide that because it does a lot of business with China, that it should have .Australia or what something equivalent thereto in Chinese. Now, I'm not saying that will be the result or won't be the result of the policy development process. I'm merely using it as an illustration of the fact that some of the statements made in these principles directly affect the discussions in the policy development process. And so I'm happy to discuss it at any length that you'd like to, but our key point was not that we're necessarily concerned about the actual principles themselves, and of course now that we've got them, we'll actually be, as interim ones, we'll actually be able to feed them into our process and work on them, but much more we were concerned about the status of the document, because if that document had the same status as the current GAC principles on CCTLDs, for example, it is effectively formal advice to the board, and there are consequences that flow from that.
Thank you, Chris. Is there anybody who would like to interact, react, comment? Egypt, Manal.
Okay, thank you, Yanis. I'm not sure, are we going through the comments? I mean, are we going through the drafting of the...
No, we're not going through the drafting. Simply, idea was that, as we discussed earlier, that maybe it would be useful briefly see how apart we are on those concerns. Well, it may happen that we're more or less on the same page. That was intention.
Okay, if I may start with Principle 6, because I think I do not understand the concern. Is the concern that we are putting limitations or relaxing the limitations or mentioning it?
Okay, so this is an example of why it's hard to have this conversation. I'm not saying there is a concern with Principle 6. What I'm saying is that Principle 6, put forward as a formal GAC principle, may end up being at odds, in conflict with what the policy development process says. And given that you, the GAC, are intimately involved in that policy development process with us as members of the working groups and so on, that's the place for those discussions to take place. So the concept of having these as interim principles fed into our policy development process is excellent, because it means that we understand the feeling amongst the GAC about certain high-level issues, and it's fantastic to have that. We just don't want them to be set at this stage. So I'm not suggesting that there is an issue with Principle 6. I'm simply saying it raises some questions that will need to be decided in the policy development process. Does that...
Yes, partially. So calling it interim would solve the problem, I mean? So, okay.
Norway. Arnav.
Yes, thank you. And I think also... not to go into the discussion here, but I think that's then, of course, GAC, I think, welcomes an interaction with the CCNSO on this matter further on. And of course, as you have pointed out here, or the CCNSO has pointed out, there is some open, maybe unanswered questions, or some interpretation can be sort of taken in this or that direction. But I think, as Yanis introduced this, is as long as we call them interim, and then we will continue to work and give a feedback into the process. And I think that will work for the GAC as well, I think. Thanks.
Annabeth?
Thank you. And from our side as well, the main thing is to have it as a draft or interim paper, because we have two processes going on at the same time. So I think this have sites or links to the geo discussion we have as well. So we must be careful not to preempt things that we want to change afterwards when we see where that ends. So I think it would be a really good idea if you could agree in making it a draft paper so we can discuss further on later. Thank you.
So that is agreed already. Manal.
But I think interim is a little bit more than a draft. I mean, so
Yes, that's right, but we agreed on the phone call that if you felt more comfortable with interim, then that was fine. Yes, you're right. From our point of view, draft would be nice, because then it has a just slightly different meaning, but we're comfortable with interim if that is what you've agreed.
Yes, though I will make sure that the proverb which says that nothing is more permanent than interim is not applicable in this case. So we will be following debate, and at one point these interim principles will turn in principles. So
of course.
That is our clear understanding.
Yes.
Annabeth.
So the main thing from our point of view is that we don't exclude the possibility to make changes. So what you call it, what's comfortable for you, it's okay.
Manal.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's agreed that it's going to be revisited as soon as necessary. But I think meanwhile we need to have it, I mean, final as per the data at hand today, so that we can reference it as far as there is no newer version or final one. So
I'm not sure I know what that means.
So maybe in other words, what I tried to say at the beginning, that these interim principles is the input in ongoing policy development, and that is, we understand that this will be some kind of subject of debate in the working group, and that these ideas will be carried over further, and whether developed or established or rejected, but then with the argumentation why they are rejected. So we do not consider that this text will be put aside and said, thank you very much indeed, we read it, very interesting in the direct meaning of this expression, just this is rubbish. In other words, so no, it won't be like that. So we will be insisting, and we will be we hope that this will be taken seriously as our input to that.
Yes, and I agree with that. And if I could just perhaps take another example to try and illustrate the point. GAC Principle 3 refers to IDN CCTLDs reflecting a country or economy's languages and scripts. The question we've asked here, is this wording intentionally broad? Or should there be further clarification regarding whether it refers to territories having the right to create IDN CCTLDs reflecting only their own official languages? You see, currently under the fast track, there's a very strong limitation to only allow an IDN CCTLD in a country's official language. Now, we do not know what the result of our policy development process will be. It might be that at the end of the policy development process, a process into which you have significant input, the policy recommendation is that it should be still kept as official languages. It might not be. But the current Principle 3 as written at least implies that what you are saying, and let's be clear here, if this is a GAC principle, then it's advice to the board, is that the GAC's position is that effectively official languages should not be relevant to IDN CCTLDs, and that territories should be able to have an IDN CCTLD in any language. So we're saying that we need to work this through the policy development process, which you're involved in, and that this is guidance and input and so on, and it's there as your document, and that we'll work with you so that eventually, hopefully, because we're quite good at this stuff, all of us will come to a consensus agreement, and we'll be able to put out our policy development process results, and you'll be able to put out a formal, if you will, GAC principles, and those two things will not actually be fighting each other, but will in fact be effectively saying the same thing.
Jayanta from Sri Lanka.
Yeah. I also keep my concurrence fully to the use of the term interim in the context of adopting these principles, and also just to elaborate, maybe some of these concerns arose from the fact that there are ongoing activities. For example, in the morning we heard about the root scaling study and the SAC report about issues, potential issues that could arise from linking variants to the original scripts, etc. So I think it is quite appropriate that we are a bit cautious in the in adopting this as formal advice and using the term interim. So I'm comfortable with that. Thank you very much.
Yes, and that's why I was comfortable with interim, because there is no official thing as an interim principle, GAC interim principle. The bylaws don't say the GAC can provide interim advice or the interim principle. So I'm comfortable with it being called interim principles, because it doesn't give it the whole bylaw weight that comes with GAC principles which go to the board as advice. Does that... Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I would like... So I think that we're now starting to turn in cycle. UK, Mark, and then we'll see whether we can go to the next agenda item, which then would be redelegation working group.
Okay, thanks. I mean, just one thought, and I think we may have touched on this in the call, and that is the relationship between this interim document and the fast track, which, I mean, does the CCNSO see some value in what we're doing here in the context of the fast track? Does that distinguish that this document in that sense from being a draft for the policy development, but as a useful setting out of some principles that apply directly to the fast track, but which anticipate a policy development which may change some of these? Does that make sense?
It does, but the problem is that, in fact, the document is at odds with some of the current fast track rules. The simplest example I can give you is the one we've just talked about. The fast track is clear, very clear, about it's only official languages, and it explains how you say that they are official languages. So I would argue that the current specific wording is at odds with that. It's a matter of interpretation, I acknowledge, but nonetheless, certainly on a surface read, I would argue that it's at odds with that. And therefore, my view is that the fast track has been adopted by the board on the basis of the fast track rules and whatever you want to call them, which you signed off on, and we signed off on jointly. So I see that actually the current interim document, I'd look at the interim document as being for the future, not for the fast track.
European Commission.
Thank you very much. I was just wondering, because I was always under the impression, but please correct me if it's wrong, that the very restrictive rules that are in the fast track currently are actually that much restrictive, because it was supposed to be an experimental process, and therefore I'm a little bit confused about kind of like necessarily working on the assumption that this would be kind of like copied one-to-one into the PDP.
Okay. You are right, but there's a little more. So the reason why the fast track is as restricted as it is partly because it's an experiment, but it's also because we had to ensure as best we could that nothing that was done in the fast track set policy for the full policy. So that's why it's rolled right back to the restricted way that it is. Because, so to take a really simple example, it's a limit of one. Because if you have a limit of zero, you have no fast track. Therefore, one is the minimum that you could have. If we said it's two, that would be preempting the discussion in the policy development process about whether it is a CCTLD in the territory as a representation of the territory in a particular language or script. So that's a discussion that needs to be had in the policy development process. And the fast track was very specifically put together so that, as far as humanly possible, it did not impinge in any way on the policy development process that would follow. So yes, it is a partly because it's experimental, but it's also because we had to make sure that we didn't actually set policy.
Thank you, Chris. But at the same time, that serves as a sort of experiment, and we will certainly learn from experience what we have with the fast track, and if experience will be positive, that may be used, maybe,
absolutely,
not necessarily, but maybe used in the policy. So, Annabeth, you are the last on this agenda item.
Okay, thank you. It was quite clear with the fast track that it should not preempt the possibilities for the final process, so I think that's a good way to start. And then, since the GAC and the CCNSO seem to have concurrent interests in contextual of country names, and here the opposites, what will not be an IDN CCTLD will be a GTLD probably, so that we have that in mind when we make the rules for it. But it would be a shame if these principles given in, and a lot of people were going, or stakeholders are going to give input to the PDP, and then use the GAC interim principles as something that will strengthen the possibility to get more country GTLDs instead of protecting country names that I thought was our common view. So just think about it when we go on. Thank you.
Thank you, Annabeth. So shall we go on then?
Which one do you want to do next?
So we just touched the fast track. Maybe if we this is not for discussion, but rather a point of information. And the question is, do you have some numbers to share with us? Where we are now with the fast track?
Kind of. My understanding is that I think the public position is that four IDN CCTLD applications have passed the fast track stage and therefore are now in the IANA process, which has obviously nothing to do with the fast track. That just happens when you do a delegation. I am aware that there have been some issues arising with some of the IADN applications in the fast track process. The issue is not being about the process, which, as far as I can tell, seems to be working quite well, but rather with the technical issues with the strings. Now, as you all know, this stuff doesn't get talked about because no one talks about it because we're not supposed to talk about it. So I can't tell you anything else other than that, other than to say that unless a particular country or territory wants to reveal that they have a problem, that's up to them. But right now, I understand there are a couple of challenges with some technical issues which are being worked on very hard to get sorted out. But I can't really go any further than that.
Yeah, thank you. According to my information, there have been, in total to date, have been 19 requests submitted covering 11 languages. As you said, four have been passed the string evaluation and others are in the process of evaluation. So that's the state of the play as far as Fast Track is concerned, what we know. So, with this, and since again IANA function was mentioned, it is there is a working group on delegation and redelegation, and it is a good pathway to that question. And Kate, if you could first of all give us some information where this working group stands, what's the state of the play, what are the perspectives and expected outcome.
Yes, well, the delegation redelegation working group was established by the CCNSO Council. It has a very limited scope to look at the policies and guidelines that apply to delegations and redelegations and compare that to the actual IANA processes and to report back to the CCNSO members on any gaps between the policies and guidelines and practices. We have been meeting frequently. It is a large working group of around 30 people, and we've decided to break our work into three separate tranches. We're looking initially at delegations, secondly at retirements, and thirdly at redelegations on the basis of trying to tackle the easiest first. it has proved to be a lot slower than we anticipated. Our intention was to have a report on the delegations process to this meeting, and that now looks only likely towards Brussels. We have, during this meeting, run an open workshop on the Sunday afternoon here, and it was fairly well attended by several GAC people as well as CCTLDs. That was an interesting session that looked at some of the individual aspects of individual delegations and redelegations, but more as an informational for the working group members rather than anything that or anything within our scope, and quite clearly it is not within our scope to look at any individual delegation or redelegation that has occurred and to relitigate. So very importantly to note, there is no ability for this group to develop policy. It can only comment back to the CCNSO members and allow the members the opportunity to decide whether there should be a policy development process. And it's not to relitigate any previous delegation or redelegation. So the work is slow but thorough. We've done a comparison between the founding policies, the essentially RFC 1591, ICANN's ICP1, and the GAC principles on delegation and redelegation. We've matrixed that set of principle or set of core policies and tried to do a gap spotting exercise, and certainly to the working group at least, there's been no apparent real difference between those policies and guidelines. They're very consistent, and we don't think there's anything there that would lead to distress amongst CCNSO members. However, it's now a question of comparing each of those guidelines against actual delegations and redelegations. We have furnished the GAC representative on our group, Suzanne Sen, with the progress report, and she was free to circulate that to the GAC, which I assume has been done.
Thank you, Kate. That was done. Yes, indeed. There was a question apparently during the discussions of the working group whether GAC principles on delegation and redelegation were still valid, and it was Suzanne passed this let's say hesitation from part of some members of the working group to the GAC, and it was on the exchange on the GAC list, and I believe she passed also a message to the working group that the GAC principles on delegation redelegation are valid in their 2005 edition, and so that is a very bylaw provision advice to the board, and as a consequence to ICANN. So I just wanted to reiterate that once again. I have now Jayanta, Kate. So Kate, please.
Just in terms of Suzanne's comments, they have been received by the working group and now incorporated into our working group papers. And I think, yes, there was just discussion within the working group to try and understand exactly at what basis the GAC believed their principles to be supported by ICANN and the ICANN board. So it's really part of our due diligence to ensure that we are dealing with proper documents in proper places with proper authorizations.
Thank you. I have three requests, Jayanta, Ornov, and Chris. Jayanta, go ahead.
Thanks, Yanis, but I think you stated what I intended saying, because I also sit on the working group as a co-observer along with Suzanne, and she wanted me to convey this position very clearly with regard to what was stated by Yanis. Just to add to what Yanis said, she also explicitly mentioned that in addition to it being formal advice and that we had explicitly referred to the GAC principles in the Model Plata GAC communique and further referenced subsequently in the Paris communique. That's all I want to add to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jente. Norway, Orna?
Yes, thank you, Yannis. Just a question also regarding I saw that the comments that we provided on the GAC list to the working group via Susanne is sort of included into the paper. But also, as I understand, there is some discussion about the sort of status of the GAC principles, the CCTLD principles, also in the workshop this week as well. That is something, if you could comment on that, and because that's something I think GAC needs to sort of just have a brief discussion about, and maybe sort of mention this as if there is some misunderstanding out there, it should be restated, the status of those principles. Thanks.
Okay. It's what I wanted to cover, but just for clarity, my recollection, I don't recall there actually being a discussion about the status of the GAC principles in the workshop. I may be wrong, but I don't think so. Just to go back a step, Patricio Poblete from Chile is online, and he was listening to what you said, Yanis, and he just wanted to say the question in the working group wasn't whether the GAC principles were valid. The question in the working group was are the GAC principles treated as policy by the board? That was actually, so what does the GAC think they are? And then the next question, therefore, is, well, what does the board think they are? And on that note, in our CCNSO members' meeting this morning, we met with Rod and Peter, and I asked Peter if he could tell us whether, in the board's view, RFC 1591 and the GAC principles were policy. And because we always avoid ICP1 because we don't like ICP1, so we just ignore it. The response I got was, well, no, they are things that, and I'm paraphrasing here, and if anyone thinks I've got this wrong, please speak up. What they are is a set of things that the board uses to develop the practice that is the practice of delegation and redelegation. So that kind of feeds back, leaving aside any discussion about our views about what his view is, that kind of feeds back into our working group, because one of the things that we've actually been talking about is there any policy? In fact, in the sense of there is policy on all sorts of things in the ICANN model, but and there is generally an understanding of what the word policy means in the ICANN model. So the question is, whether, and the GAC principles hold a specific GAC principle advice status, but then there's policy as well. So that's the sort of stuff that we're trying to deal with in this working group, and it's one of the reasons why it's taking quite some considerable time. I acknowledge completely that what I'm about to say is an oversimplification, but in some ways, the way that, and this is personal to me, the way that I see it is that you've got high-level statements, and I would say the GAC principles are high-level statements. I'm not talking about their status now, just what they are. They're high-level statements. The next level down, if you like, is what we would all call policy, which you would argue, and in fact I would agree with you, has to be based on at least the GAC principles, because that's the status that they have in the bylaws, unless the board decides to ignore them and there's a process for doing that. So the next step down is policy, and that is basically taking those high-level principles and putting some more detail in them. And then the last level down is implementation, and that is where you send the people away and say, right, this is the policy, how do you do that? And what appears to be missing right now in the delegation and redelegation area is actual policy. Now, we could all sit around this table and simply say, well, we're just going to treat RFC 1591 as policy, but I would argue that that's quite a hard thing to do because it doesn't actually have enough meat in it, enough detail in it for it to actually count as policy. It's more of a high-level statement. But having said that, this is where we are and we need to work our way through this and come up with some sort of a recommendation to the CCNSO at some point.
Thank you. Manal, Egypt.
Thank you. Before I start, I fully endorse what Norway said, that we have to clear this principles thing, and I think this should be done with the board basically first and then come with the output. I have a question that I was not sure when exactly to ask because it comes from the fast track and goes to the PDP and passes through the delegation and redelegation. So I was not sure where exactly to put it. But from our experience with the fast track, I think that within the PDP, the IANA should be on board with the process. I mean, even to minimize any surprises on both sides, from the IANA and from the applicant. Because when we finished the string evaluation and we were filling the application for the IANA, for example, it simply says domain name. And I was not sure, is this the XN dash dash thing? Is this the Arabic script thing? Is this the... On the other hand, I was expecting to be asked for the language table, which turned to be not asked for. I mean, clarity in interfacing with other processes. And this has nothing to do with the IANA process itself from inside. I mean, the interface, because within the process there are much more to be said.
I need to say something. Can I respond? Two things. I understand what you're saying. I'm loath to get into a discussion about that right now because it's a very, very long discussion. But I did want to apologise. You are right, actually. I just remembered that it did come up, the GAC principles did come up in the working group, and they came up in this context. Peter Dengates-Rush was asked in that working group about the GAC principles, and he said, well, they've never been endorsed by the board, or accepted by the board, or some wording like that.
Never been formally endorsed.
Formally endorsed by the board. Thank you, Manal. And I said, I'm not sure that that's actually necessary. My understanding is that you send the GAC advice to the board, and as long as that advice is followed, then that's it. If it isn't, then there's a process for dealing with that. But I'm not aware that there is a bylaw process for the acceptance of the advice. Rather, there is a bylaw process for the non-acceptance of the advice. So you are right, and you may wish to clarify that with the board.
Thank you. Norway, Arnulf?
Yes, thanks for that. And of course, as you said, it might not be a procedure saying that they sort of have followed that advice or not. But of course, the GAC advice at least has to be acknowledged. And of course, they might not sort of want to go in detail this and this and where that is, where that advice has been implemented, etc. But at least the status of a document or a GAC advice needs to be acknowledged as GAC advice, and of course then they can refer to them as GAC advice, and then if there is some disputes afterwards, then of course that can be challenged that they haven't followed the advice, and so but there will be a dispute on that, but still it needs to be, as I said, acknowledged in a certain way.
Thank you. Canada, Netherlands and Egypt.
Thank you, Chair. And I really appreciate having this exchange with the CCNSO today. It has been a while, I think, since we had this kind of discussion, so that's quite useful. In support of comments made by colleagues, it is certainly agreed, I think, within the GAC that that advice is formal public policy advice. So I don't think that's particularly in dispute. And it may well be the case that we do need to look at the actual intricacies of the, you know, acceptance and non-acceptance of the advice with the board. And I like Manal's suggestion that, that we actually undertake some discussions on that with the board. And I just will note that the joint working group at the moment on the review of the role of the GAC is actually looking into those sorts of issues. And so perhaps that will be informative. I would also like to note that, and do correct me if I'm mistaken, but the task of this working group is to establish whether or not a policy development process is indeed needed, appropriate, correct?
In effect, it is to come back to the council and the members and say, we think everything's fine, or it's not so unfine that you need to do anything about it, or we think actually there are some issues here which need to be dealt with in some form of policy development process. So that does not mean that the members and the council will say yes that there should be a PDP, but the working group's job is to do that. Yes.
Thank you. Then I would note that I am making no presumption that a PDP is necessary. Thank you.
So thank you. Before I'm giving floor to Netherlands, Suzanne Sen sent me a note. She is participate remotely. She is on the phone, and she will be speaking after Manal. Netherlands.
Thank you, Janice. I think Heather took my point. thanks for that on one way. But just to stress the fact that the uncertainty about the status of the CAC principles, which I believe, as Heather said, to be really a global public policy principles, to be accepted as advice, to be affirmed as advice, because we have seen in the past that using the CAC principles can be done in opportunistic way, or in let's say in sometimes it can be said that okay, it says here, so we'll have to do it like this. In other occasions, it can be said, okay, well, it's just practical guidance for us, and we're not bounded to edit. So there's quite some let's say downsides of having such a non-defined status. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Egypt, Manal.
Just very quickly, I of course add my voice to Canada and Netherlands that the GAC advice is the GAC principles. I don't see it as only an advice, but an ongoing one. I mean, it's a principle that we don't want to keep repeating it as an advice, so we put it as a principle that should continue. So, and I think this is agreed. On the part of the principles and the workshop, I think what caused the confusion was that when you mentioned that the principle has to be the advice has to be rejected, I think there were misunderstanding maybe of the principles of 2000, because it was mentioned that the bylaws were after the principles, which is the principles of 2000. Maybe we have to be more clear when we come up with principles that we say those obsolete old principles or are a complement, or is an addition to old principles.
Thank you, Manal, for reminding me of that. That's correct. What Peter said was that when I said it's only if they are rejected and then there's a process for dealing with that rejection, he said, yes, but that bylaw came in after the principles, and actually that's correct. It did come in after the 2000 principles, but the 2005 principles came along after the bylaw. So as far as I'm concerned, that those principles are the subject of the current bylaw.
Thank you for this clarification, Chris. Suzanne.
Yes, thank you. And I wanted to apologize for being cut off at the very moment that you were inviting me to chime in. I didn't know if you wanted me to add anything.
No, I understood that you were ready to and willing to say something as a member of the working group and following the working group.
Thank you very much. I did just want to concur with the more recent, the updated restatement, if you will, of the GAC position by Ornolf and Manal and Heather, so that we do to just simply confirm with our CCNSO colleagues and hopefully ultimately through the communique with our board colleagues that those principles do still stand, and we do hope that they are formative of whatever policy process there is or practice.
Thank you, Suzanne. Becky Burr.
Did you want to say something?
No. Then the next was asking for the floor, Annabeth.
Just a short comment, actually, that what the confusion between 2000 and 2005 principles, I think they are being referred to quite some times, and they use the 2000 principles instead. So in my opinion, it would be wise to go out and say they are void, they don't exist any longer. It's the 2005 principles that are the GAC principles.
Thank you, Annabeth. I recall that we had similar type of conversation already with the board, I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago. There was an even URL pointing to GAC 2000 principles. We specifically requested board to change URL and that it would point to 2005 principles. So I believe it is done. But I think we need to clarify that, verify first, and then clarify that with the board. Thank you for noting this again, bringing to our attention. So, any other requests for the floor on this subject? So I see no, none. Then we can move to another. Next agenda item, ICANN Regions, Working Group on ICANN Regions.
Thank you. I received just a very brief report from Dave Archbold, who is chairing the working group looking at the ICANN Regions. And I think for the interests of brevity, I could send on the one-page report to Yanis to be pasted to the GAC list. But essentially, the working group is currently working on a second interim report, and it's come into quite a number of complexities relating to the community impact of any changes to ICANN regions. So the work has slowed down, but they're looking to produce their second interim report in time for public comments prior to Brussels. So I think if I send this very brief report to Yanis, and then if people who are interested in that issue pursue it when that second interim report comes along.
Thank you, Kate. Any questions on the state of play with the working group on geographic regions? Any comments? UK? Mark?
Sorry, maybe I didn't quite catch it. Do you know the date of when that next iteration of the report is?
In time for public comments to close prior to the Brussels meeting, so... I'm not sure exactly what that constitutes by the calendar we use.
So, in other words, at least 2 months prior Brussels meeting. So, moving on to the next agenda item, geonames in new GTLDs. Kate, do you want to take a lead, or Annabeth?
Thank you. I think I got that task. So what I've tried to do is to summarize a little of what has happened and where we stand today. So since ICANN has not published a new version of the draft applicant guidebook, I tried to find out to which degree they have listened to the comments and input from the GAC and the CCNSO, and some specific government and registries as well, based on the public comment and analysis document for DAG 3. And what's peculiar is that what distinguished the chapter on geographical names from the rest of the report is that Article 3, analysis and proposed solution or position, has been left out. So we have to ask about why, and I have asked Bart about that, so he should look into why. The CCNSO has clearly conveyed to ICANN that country and territory names do not belong in the GTLD space. And we have also tried to have the definition of what is included in used in the fast track and a meaningful representation to also apply for country and territory names. As for the GAC, you have also submitted comments on several occasions on this subject, and in your letter of the 18th of August 2009 to ICANN, the GAC expresses their opinion as country and territory names should not be allowed in the GTLD space. Still, it seems like ICANN has chosen to ignore this advice so far we can see from the papers we have now. On pages 50 to 51 in the comment document, ICANN refers to the GAC principles for the new GTLD principles 2.2, where the GAC states that country and territory names need the consent of the government to be used as a GTLD. And it also says that in 8.3 in the delegation principles as a fact. And ICANN says there that the treatment of country and territory names in the guidebook was developed to specifically adhere to these principles. And I quote, while the GAC appears to have moved away from this in favor of the CCNSO position through language in recent communiques, the GAC has not formally amended their principles document. So it seems like if we are going to move that position, it needs a formal advice from the GAC in some way or other. If we succeed in keeping the country and territory names out of the GTLD space, we still have the post-delegation problem to solve. And the post-delegation problem was stated in the CCNSO letter to ICANN on DAG 3. ICANN's answer in the public comment document is that, of course, the government can give conditional support. So I cannot find anything in the document commenting what will happen if the conditions under which the support was given are broken. So if the contract between the government or the public authority and the registry given a TLD is in breach of contract, then the government want to withdraw the support, what will happen with the delegation? In the report, it is referred to the community objection, but in my view, that is not satisfactory. One solution could be that ICANN, in their contract with the registry, includes a condition that if the registry breaks their contract with the authority that have given the support, and if the breach of contract proven by court order of the respective country, this means that ICANN is free to withdraw the delegation. I'm sure this is one option. It could be other options, but I'm sure there could be viable ways to solve this if the good intentions are there. So what we have to do is to consider how to proceed from now to make the changes we want in the final DAG. On point one, no country and territory names in the GTLD space. Leave them for now. Wait until the IDN CCTLD PDP is finished, and then we can have time to give these names a new thorough consideration. Better rules for post-delegation. And even if we succeed in getting country and territory names out of the GTLD space for now, this is needed because of the cities. The capital city names will be GTLDs, and so will cities. And all geographical names needing support non-objection will also need better rules for post-delegation. And for city names not used to represent the city, there are no requirements for support. Still, there has to be consequences if the registrar, after a while, starts to use the TLD towards the city or some other regional things. If so, the registry should have had that support, which it has not. So also here, proper post-delegation rules are needed. So that's what I've summed up from the papers we have. So, comments.
Thank you, Annabeth. A lot of information. It would be very good if you could send me this note that I could distribute it further to the GAC list. I would like to invite GAC members to react to these comments. What I can say, technically, staff is right on the on GAC advice. We never considered amendment of GAC new GTLD principles, though we expressed support to CCNSO in one of our communiques on this very subject. I think that I speak for myself. I think that there might be some, let's say, reticence to go that far as complete ban of geographic names in G space. Country territory names. Yeah, but again, I am turning to GAC members for reaction. I saw Norway. That's a one country playing on two courts. So it's a mixed double. Maybe Germany first, then Norway on this side, for the time being Germany and then Norway. And then Becky Burr on CCNSO side. Go ahead, Hubert.
Yes, thank you. On this question concerning GAC principles, I don't think it's... for me, it's a bit difficult to answer it, because I think also our principle can be interpreted as in conformance with our letters that have been sent. But this has to be investigated by the colleagues. The other issues, I think we as Germany support as because I think these issues are always raised, post-delegation questions. We as a country have several top-level domains which will probably be applied if there is a possibility, and we as government support it. We now see a new development that maybe I also would like to share with you, that is that we will have competition for these names, and this makes the situation for the government not easier. Something I also want to clearly state, that the government's non-objection refers not to the use of this, not only to the use of the string, but also to the applicant. The government are choosing not only the string that being used. So we don't have an objection towards using the name Hamburg or whatever. We think we also have the obligation to choose the applicant. And that's an important issue for us. And therefore, I just want to emphasize this issue. And the next question comes if we have some contest and we have to decide as a government. I think there is some time to be spent for this selection process. It is not that we just send a non-objection letter. We have to find our rules and make our decisions, and I hesitate whether this is possible in the application window I can has projected. Yes, and one issue I really always mentioned in within GAC and with discussions with the board, and that is the issue. I also don't think that the definition, what is a geographical string, is sufficient. One example, we have quite a lot of examples de facto which are discussed. Barcelona, BCN. BCN is not the city name. We have NYC. New York City is NYC, is not the city name. We have in our country a federal state, Nordrhein-Westfalen. Nordrhein-Westfalen, the complete string would be protected under ISO 31662, but the common abbreviation NRW is not protected and therefore wouldn't be fall under the regulations for geographic names. And therefore, I really like to share your position, and that's exactly what we also expect. Thank you.
Thank you. Ornof, Norway, and then Becky.
Thank you, Amis. I think the CCNSO position also sort of comprises what Norway also have concerns about, and we have inputted into the proposed draft letter, where the letter we sort of mark is sort of having a lead on. We have proposed some text sort of to restate those issues. Regarding the first one is also that the alternative is to make a comment from the GAC that our interpretation of the principles, paragraph 2.2, is that we want to not allow in country and territory names into the GTLD space, but other geographical strings can be implemented if in agreement with relevant government or public authority. The other alternative is to make a discussion in the GAC if actually we should amend that paragraph in our principles and actually state that. But this is something, of course, we haven't thoroughly discussed in the GAC, but of course it is clear that we did say in our letter in August 2009 that we did not want to have country and territory name strings into the GTLD space. So that's at least what we also propose for the GAC to input either in the letter or the communique. Maybe we can have some further discussion on later sessions, maybe today or tomorrow. On the other issue, as also stated by Germany, it's quite important to have this post-delegation mechanism of ensuring if you have given a letter of support or non-objection, ensuring that that is complied with afterwards. So that is also one thing we have sort of a possible suggestion, is to have a clause there into the registry agreement that ICANN must comply with a sort of legally binding decision in the relevant jurisdiction, so to ensure that ICANN will not become liable, because if they terminate a registry contract and it's not in breach of that contract, ICANN will be liable for breaching that contract and can be sued. So it would also be in ICANN's interest to have this into the contract. In the case where a government goes to ICANN saying, well, this top-level domain should be redelegated because they have a breach of our current contract with that registry. So I think it suits all parties to have that in, actually. It's the best thing for the government giving the support or non-objection, and it's the best thing for ICANN. So I think they really should make an effort to make a practical solution for this. Thanks.
Thank you, Ornof. Becky?
I just wanted to clarify that I don't believe the position of the CCs is a complete ban for all time, but particularly in light of the delegation and redelegation process, that policy consideration process that's going on, the notion of considering country or regional names in the early phases of the new GTLD round seems inappropriate or dangerous, I guess that's probably, because those same issues will almost certainly come up. And to the extent that there is consensus down the road for a change on that, whatever the results of this work on delegation and redelegation can help inform that.
Thank you, Vicky. Chris?
Thank you, Yanis. I wanted to just pick up on the points being made about post-delegation issues. Of course, all these problems are solved if you don't delegate in the first place. That's not an issue anymore. But if you do delegate, then the more I look at this, the more I think about this, the more complicated it becomes. So let's imagine, and Peter, no intention of taking Australia's name in vain here, but let's imagine that the government of Australia decides that it is actually prepared to enter in to have .Australia as a GTLD, okay? And they decide that they're going to get a registry to run .Australia for them. And they do that, and that registry is a registry with a GTLD, and it has a contract with ICANN. So if you build in all of the things that you've talked about with, you know, you think that they are doing something outside of their contract, so you need to have the right to go to ICANN and say, change this. Well, there are significant commercial issues with that. This company may have built up a huge business. It may well fight the claim that it is operating outside of its contract, and it would be presumably ICANN who it would be fighting, because it's ICANN that it has the contract with. So then you have, of course, because it's a GTLD contract, it will be based in America, because all the GTLD contracts are based in America, and so therefore they will end up fighting in an American court, because you, the government, have gone along and said, well, we don't actually think they're doing what they said they were going to do. But there's another scenario, which is that the government in your country changes, and the new government decides that it doesn't care whether the company is doing what it said it was going to do or not. This TLD, .Australia, is going to be run by us, the government. We will not accept this company. So then what happens? Then you'll be sitting here in this room as GAC representative saying, but my country wants to take over this GTLD. And there's no mechanism for that to occur, because there's a live and extant contract between the registry running .Australia and ICANN. The reason given by, the only reason I have heard given by ICANN for saying that country names should be possible in the GTLD space is because some countries may want them. I would argue that even if that's true, the cost of doing that could be so huge that it is actually worth making the sacrifice of not having them in order to ensure that we don't all end up spending the next 10 years in court fighting about whether .Germany, for example, or .Australia belongs to the government or belongs to a registry or whatever.
Thank you. Nigeria and then Netherlands. Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope my phone. I actually want to lend my support to what Germany, Australia said, and the chair of CCNSO. I don't know what happens in your own country. In my country, even a city name, if you want to incorporate a company, a city name is not allowed to be incorporated as a company, even if it's for non-profit making. It's a legislation in my country. And for that reason, I think we have enough generic names apart from the country names for the GTLD. So coin any name from any other place and leave out the country names, I think it will pay everybody. We'll not be sitting here and making, just as Chris said, talking about it, because the the countries that are not well informed, anybody could come, and ours is very, very vulnerable because we change our government, our leaders too often, and new issues will be raised, and the litigation will be. And I don't think jurisdictions will be subjected to other jurisdictions' own law and regulations or legislation. So I think that for the time being, let's see how the IDN plays out. If it plays out well, then we'll look at the other ones. I think there are enough dictionary words in the whole world for the GTLD, the new GTLD, to play around with. That's my own contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. So Thomas from Netherlands is the last one on this agenda item. I would like to move and briefly discuss the last one. Thomas, please.
Two comments. First of all, I think that speaking in concordance with also Manel and Ornolf, these principles are subject also to thinking and evolution of thinking and, let's say, maturing our thinking. So it could best be that you can change your principles because you have encountered new situations in which you should amend your principles. So that's I'm very much in favor of amending this, the principles, and could be done in a quick way. Second thing is the remarks which Chris made about, let's say, the bad scenario in which the government changed, etc. I think basically what you're saying is the regime which is now in place for CCTLDs. I mean, ICANN looks at national law, looks at contracts, looks at etc. So I don't see the difference being this. For me, it's not a bad situation. Even it's the regime we know from CCTLD. And even if the government changes, at least we have there's contracts. And if one of the party wants to change the contract or break the contract and the other doesn't approve, they go to court. So there's a court order. So I don't see the negative impact of what you're suggesting. Okay, thank you.
Can I see if I can address that just briefly? It isn't the same as a CCTLD situation. CCTLDs, generally speaking, are not subject to contracts with ICANN, generally speaking, are not subject to contracts with ICANN. They are not subject to American law and so on. Now, it is, yes, Thomas, it's possible that you could have a three-way contract where you had a contract between the registry, the government, and ICANN. Yes, that is possible. And then that I don't think would necessarily stop difficulties, but you could do that. You could have one where the government runs the thing in the first place and therefore has a contract with ICANN. If indeed a sovereign government were prepared to enter into a GTLD contract with ICANN. But I don't think you can say that a GTLD governed by a commercial contract with ICANN would be dealt with in the same way as a CCTLD. It is a totally different animal, and it would be very hard to rely on the CCTLD principle that effectively, you know, after a while, if the government really is determined that this thing is going to change, it will change. That isn't going to be the case, I would argue, in a commercial world.
So probably Thomas' reaction.
Yeah, I misunderstood you probably, but I understand that you basically it's a plea to have it regarded, to have it seen as a CCTLD. You mean?
No, absolutely not. I am not saying that we want to grab more names. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that they just shouldn't be, basically, at least for now, because of the difficulties that arise. If you were to have, my personal view is very simple. They are neither CCTLDs nor GTLDs. They are the name of a sovereign territory. And the concept that you would put the name of a sovereign territory as a GTLD on the internet, I actually find quite difficult to deal with.
So I wanted to close the debate, but now I see that Switzerland is looking for the floor, but before that there was already Norway. And these are really two last speakers. So now we have more. Pakistan and then League of Arab States. But please try to keep your remarks brief. Norway.
Yes, thank you, Anis. Yeah, I just want to be very brief. We just think that the best way for countries to exercise their sovereign rights, also agreed between countries in the Tunis agenda, the paragraph 63, is to have the country and territory names as a CCTLD, because then the sovereignty rights are then exercised in a sort of already existing mechanism. So that's, we feel that's the best way for the governments to do. Thanks.
Thank you. Switzerland, Thomas.
Thank you. I think the case that Chris has explained is a very important one. And the same problem, I think governments or local authorities do not only face this problem with territory names on national level, but the same goes for city names and region names. And this is one of the reasons why there is some discussion and thinking in the GAC about having categories other than GTLDs and CCTLDs for these and other cases. Thank you.
So thank you. Pakistan?
Thank you. Essentially, the territorial names could actually cause a political furor within our country because we are a federation and provinces have got autonomy. So unless we develop a consensus within the country first, I think we should not tread this course. It can become a politically very contentious for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Arif, for your comments. And now, League of Arab States.
Thank you, Anis. Actually, I raised this topic during the last IGF in Sharm el Sheikh, and I don't know if Chris remembers that, because we were actually asking about the possibility of the League of Arab States applying for a CCTLD, and the criteria then was the United Nations ISO standards, which did not include the Arab League. So, I mean, is there a possibility now for us to go to that channel or to move to that channel? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Khaled, for the question. I believe in order to save time, you may want to discuss with Chris it outside. I would like to touch slightly on the agenda item on CCTLD contributions to ICANN budget. That is the question which, in one way or another, need to be addressed. I don't say that this is a matter of urgency, but with the introduction of Fast Track, we saw that this may cause some attempt of discrimination against CCTLDs. IDNs were sort of asked to pay in a compulsory way. We made it clear that the regime should be the same, but that does not resolve the, let's say, issue in the longer run. So question of sustainability of ICANN's budget and sustainability of contributions and the system which has been established historically, so needs to be addressed in one way or another. This is maybe a short background of this. We could start exchange and see whether there is a convergence of opinion on that, and whether that may trigger some further dialogue on the subject between us before it goes somewhere further. So I would like to invite Chris. Yeah, Chris will.
Thank you, Yanis. The subject of CCTLD contributions to the ICANN budget is a live one. It comes around with monotonous regularity at almost every meeting. Now, the current situation is that a number of CCTLDs Recently received a letter from ICANN in the usual way at the right time of the year, saying that, you know, that time has come to make a contribution, and so on. This year the letter was actually slightly different and a lot longer, and goes into a lot of detail about making contributions, and it would be fair to say that a little bit of confusion perhaps has been caused because people were unclear as to what this letter was and why they were receiving it, because it wasn't the same as the normal letter. So at the same time, there are a number of board members who are putting increasing pressure on the staff to, you know, push us along to make an increased financial contribution. We acknowledge that there is currently a gap between what the CCTLDs pay and what ICANN currently says it costs them to service us. They currently say that costs $9 million. We have detail, and it's excellent that we have detail. We are really, really pleased, and Kevin has done a fantastic job in providing us with the detail. We do still have some questions and discussions, etc., but we do have some detail. The current CCTLD level of contribution for the last year is approximately $1.5 or $1.6 million. So you don't have to be a mathematician to know that there is quite a large gap between what ICANN says we cost and what we pay. And we acknowledge that. And we acknowledge that work needs to be done in respect to that. What we agreed in our members' meeting this morning is... I need to take a step back for a second. We did a lot of work on this quite some considerable time ago, and some of you may not be aware that actually on the CCNSO website is a series of guidelines provided by the CCNSO to CCTLD managers on making payments to ICANN. And those guidelines, in summary, say, we think you should pay. As a general principle, if you're coming to play in ICANN's tent, you should pay. And it also says, amongst other things, you know, it's voluntary and all of that, and it says that we will publish each year a list of the contributions that CCTLDs make. And one way that you as a CCTLD could consider working out how much you think you should be paying is to look at countries or territories that are similar to yours and see what they're paying, and, you know, that's kind of, you know, the leaders in the community, and that's maybe what you should do. So just to take a really simple example, Australia and Canada are roughly similar in number of domains, systems, and so on. So we might look at each other and say, well, you know, one of us is paying $100,000 and the other one is paying $5,000, and clearly there's a problem there, and so the one that's paying $100 should reduce it to $5. So that's been there for quite some time, and it is at least in part because of that that CCTLD contributions have in the past 5 years gone up by, I think, about 150%. So it's not correct to say that, you know, we've done nothing and we're twiddling our thumbs and just all enjoying the hospitality without actually paying any money. So because of the confusion that's been caused by the letters, because it's live and because we need to do something about it, our starting point, which we agreed this morning with our members, was that the council will probably tomorrow pass a formal resolution in re-endorsing the current methodology that we have on our website, but acknowledging the gap and saying that we need to move forwards, and etc. And then the goal would be that we would, in Brussels, we would start what will, I'm sure you know, be a laborious and hard process to see if we can achieve anything.
Thank you, Chris, for this information. Any comments, reactions, thoughts? We need to take into account that at least on one occasion that comes to my mind, GAC expressed itself in the communique on the disbalance in ICANN's budget when it comes to contributions. So that registries, registrars provide a majority of funding, and at that meeting we felt that that is not sustainable in the longer run. So the way how to address the issue, of course, is the question, whether that is issue just for CCTLDs, for CCTLD operators, or that is the global issue of ICANN budget, and see what would be the right proportions, what would be the right level of contributions, what would be the mechanism of those who contribute to the budget, also to control the planning of the budget, control execution of the budget, and so on and so forth. So that is a complex question. Whether the time is ripe to address that issue, I don't know. But in one way or another, sooner or later, that question should be addressed, and some kind of a more sustainable formula found. So whether we're ready, I don't know. Interesting to hear your views on that. Kenya and then UK.
Thank you, Chair. Mine has to do not completely directly with funding, but it's, and I'm sorry if this has already been dealt with, but I'm curious as to how the CCNSO is going to be dealing with the implementation of DNSSEC and how they'll facilitate our CCTLDs in terms of membership for that, and if there's consideration for ICANN to fund that process. Thank you.
Alice, your question is whether CCNSO provides some technical assistance to country code operators in introducing DNSSEC. Okay, you can think about the question, about the answer. Mark, you were asking for the floor.
I was just, thank you, Jens. I was just going to respond to your question to us here about whether this is an issue that we should start to look at in some detail. I guess it's kind of a pretty complex issue. CCTLD contributions to the budget. I would suggest to my colleagues here that this is an issue that we've been aware of for some time, but we have not found time to investigate it, to consult registries and so on, and look at possible alternative mechanisms, alternative formulae. I would argue that it is time that we started to look at this, at this important turning point in ICANN's future with the new GTLDs and so on. So we can discuss this further in the GAC, but my view is that very sympathetic to this issue being raised by the CCNSO, and that we should pick it up before time. Thanks.
Thank you, Australia. Peter.
I think Mark's basically said what I was going to say, but I would support that. I agree that it's a pretty complicated issue. But I think our view is that it is time possibly to look at this. From our point of view, it seems that there are all kinds of hidden cross-subsidies between CCTLDs and GTLDs, and potentially, arguably, within the CCTLDs, given that the range of arrangements that there are. In our view, it's possibly, like, I mean, we would need to look at it, but it's quite probable that an outcome will be that it is appropriate that there may be some cross subsidies in certain cases, but we think it would be nice to look at some principles behind that and make it transparent. We think the current system is probably not ideal.
Thank you, Peter. Indeed, there are cross subsidies, and not only between GTLDs and CCTLDs, but also in GTLDs and the rest of the community. ILAC is benefiting from financial support GAC is benefiting from financial support. Other advisory committees are benefiting in bigger or lesser extent, but they are. They do. So it seems that time has come to close the session, but there was a question from Kenya, if you would, Chris, be ready to answer.
I'm not sure I can. I'd like to, if I can, Alice, just have a chat with you about it afterwards. I think you're asking us if the CCNSO is doing anything to help individual territories with DNSSEC, and I think the answer to that is, in very simple terms, is, well, not officially, but we're all, you know, those of us that have implemented DNSSEC are obviously always willing and able to assist our colleagues.
Okay, thank you. We had another agenda item on our in front of us, the state of play with E-Ayana, but I was told that Kim Davies, who was planned to give us some information about that, is not well today, and he's not around. We will try to find out information, and we will circulate this information on the GAC list, and if Chris will circulate on the CC list, then it's up to you, Chris. But thank you very much indeed. I found that we covered a lot of ground, and we had at least preliminary engage in interesting, in a proper sense of this term, debate. Thank you very much indeed. We will follow up on number of issues, whether we will schedule our meeting in Brussels or in Latin America, that remains to be decided. Brussels. No objections for Brussels?
Can I just say, Yanis, I think we've reached the conclusion that unless there really isn't anything to talk about, and that is so rare as to be almost unheard of, that we now have, as far as we're concerned, a permanent slot in our agenda. Our preference is Tuesday after lunch, but that is always flexible, and so the change is more how long rather than whether. So, you know, one meeting it might be an hour, another meeting it might be two, but that we really do appreciate the way that the GAC and the CCNSO are able to work together. So I certainly encourage us to continue to do that.
Thank you. Appreciation is mutual.
Right. Good.
Thank you. We're making now break until 4 o'clock Nairobi time for those who are following us on the phone. 15 minutes break, and then we will engage in preparatory session for our meeting with the board. 30 minutes and. Information about access to audio streaming was sent separately to the GAC mailing list. Please use those because the session will be closed and there won't be public record in this. Thank you.
For my CC colleagues, we're due back in our room at 4 o'clock as well, please. 4 o'clock, sharp. Thank you.